I live across the street from a little park. And when the lockdown started, they put up signs. This park is closed for recreation. And they put these plastic strips around the playgrounds. And so Russians just tore down the plastic strips and would go jogging and work out. And sometimes they'd get on the swings with their kids. And then the plastic strips would go back again, and then they would just rip them down again. I'm Michelle Birdie. I'm the arts editor for the Moscow Times, and I write mostly on arts and culture. I have lived here perhaps longer than any other American. I have lived here for the better part of the last 42 years. Can you believe that? Since 1978.
That is a long time. Wow.
It's a really long time. It makes me really kind of insufferable when everybody complains about the 90s. I'm like, honey, you know, the 90s were the good years. You should have been here in the late 70s and 80s.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, life in Russia during the coronavirus pandemic. So, where were things in Russia before the pandemic, and what was President Putin doing at the time?
Well, I have to admit that Putin and I are not very good friends, but he began to try to change the presidential terms that was in the Constitution, which meant that he would be able to run for president for two more terms and serve until 2036 when he was 84 years old. That was going to go to a general vote in April. He was also arranging for this really grand celebration of the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II. So the spring was kind of set out to be this celebration of Putin and everything he had done for the country, and that Russia was back on the world stage as a world player. And then coronavirus hit. Essentially, the line was, we've got it. We're okay. We've closed the borders. Everything is going to be fine. And the newscasts were all filled with images of Italy and France and then the United States, and everything was a mess everywhere, but we were perfectly fine. Just in case, everything was being set up, a couple extra hospitals were being built in record time, and we were fine. And then suddenly, we kind of weren't fine. Suddenly, the numbers really started climbing.
So this situation really changes. Now we're at the point where Russia has the second highest number of reported cases in the world, only behind the U.S. But when things are starting to get worse, in March, Putin calls for a national vacation for things to shut down, which stays in effect for weeks. Where is he during that time?
He has left it to the local authorities to be kind of the bad moms and bad dads. And they're the ones who have been insisting on lockdowns and passes and masks and gloves and so forth. But he has really been quite distant from it. In the earlier years, Putin was flying in airplanes and going down underwater and going on boats, and he was always sort of in the midst of things. And on this one, he has really been out at his residence and not involved. On May 11th, Putin said, we are going to stop the nationwide kind of work holiday tomorrow. But each individual city can decide, and each individual region can decide when to start work again. So right after that, the mayor of Moscow said, we're still on lockdown until at least the end of May. And we're even going to tighten it. We even have rules that if you are in a public place, you have to wear masks and gloves. At the same time, he let 5 categories of businesses get back to work. So all of our friends were like, okay, so it's really bad and we now have to wear masks and gloves, but it's really good so 5 different categories of workers can go back to work. Which is it? The other joke was, of course, that when there were 1,000 new infections a day, we went on lockdown. Now that there are 10,000 new infections a day, we're going back to work. It has not been an organized process.
What has it been like for businesses and for workers during all of this?
The majority of people who work for really big organizations are either getting paid or in most cases they're working at home and occasionally sometimes going into the office. But all of the non-essential shops and services have been closed down. Those are mostly small, privately owned organizations, little businesses. And those people are really having a very, very hard time. Some of our neighbors own little businesses in the area. There are benefits that they can apply for, but none of them found that any of the benefits applied to them. So all of them have to continue to pay rent. One of them has a small shop. He said his business is down. It's an internet shop, and that's down about 90%. But nobody really knows when things will open up again. And all of them are going to probably have a huge amount of debt. And some of them are just not going to be able to open up. One shop has already closed. There is another flower shop that we feel really bad about. They opened the day before Women's Day on March 8th, which is a Russian holiday that's kind of a combination of Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, and everybody's birthday. And it was a big grand opening, and they sold 1 billion flowers. And then less than 3 weeks later, they had to close. We have no idea if they're going to be able to survive or not. And none of them have been able to get any kind of government support. So I kept asking everybody, did you expect government support? And it was kind of a joke because here I am, this American, you know, rugged individualism, you're on your own, that kind of thing. And I kept thinking, you know, if you pay taxes in cases like this, your government is supposed to help you. These people were raised in the sort of Soviet nanny state, but none of them expected that the government would lift a finger to help them. All of them just thought they were on their own.
Well, why is that? Like, why is it that it seems like for big businesses, worrying about funding and aid from the government isn't really a problem at all, but smaller places and some of these workers who you live near are left out on their own?
Well, Nikolai Petrov, who was one of the people I asked about that, he's a political scientist who's now at Chatham House in London. He said it's simply because Putin, his base, his support base is big business. His support base is not these little guys, you know, who have a hair salon or an internet shop, so that he wants to keep big business happy. They want to kind of keep him happy. Everybody makes money. Everything's fine. So far, that has worked for him. But over the past 10 years, really since the crisis of 2008-2009, real incomes have fallen. And it is still much better than it was 30 years ago or 25 years ago. But it's not as good as it was in 2007. So the question is whether this is going to cause some more problems or not. Even people I know who didn't like some things about Putin, but thought, basically kind of stabilized the country, got things going in the right direction after the chaos of change in the 1990s, even they were really disappointed. You know, it's time to have a change of leadership. It's time for some fresh ideas. I think it will be difficult for him to continue on doing the same old, same old. I think more and more people are going to be unhappy with that.
Michelle Birdie, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to speak with you today.
Michelle Birdie is a journalist at the Moscow Times. To read her story for Politico magazine, check our episode notes or go to politico.com. Also today, President Trump is threatening to move the Republican National Convention in August out of North Carolina unless the state guarantees it will allow full attendance. North Carolina still has some social distancing measures in place aimed at preventing the spread of coronavirus, and the state's currently in phase two of Governor Roy Cooper's reopening plan, where indoor gatherings are limited to 10 people. In a series of tweets on Monday, President Trump said he loves North Carolina so much that he insisted on having the convention in Charlotte, but quote, unfortunately, Democrat Governor Roy Cooper is still in shutdown mode and unable to guarantee that by August we will be allowed full attendance in the arena. The GOP convention is set to be held in Charlotte on August 24th through 27th, which is less than a week after Democrats are set to finish their rescheduled convention in Milwaukee. In a statement, Governor Cooper said North Carolina was cooperating with the RNC and that, quote, North Carolina is relying on data and science to protect our state's public health and safety. And the World Health Organization is pausing the use of hydroxychloroquine in its global study of coronavirus. The announcement comes after a large observational study published last week found an increased risk of heart problems and death in coronavirus patients who used hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine. It also comes after President Trump, who had been championing hydroxychloroquine, announced last week that he's taking the drug to prevent coronavirus, a move that was widely criticized by medical experts. Hydroxychloroquine was among several drugs the WHO was evaluating as a potential treatment in what's called a solidarity trial. In a media briefing, the organization's director general said while hydroxychloroquine is still accepted as generally safe for use in patients with autoimmune disease or malaria, the WHO is implementing a temporary pause on the use of the drug in the trial while it reviews safety data. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And to stay up on all of our latest coverage of the coronavirus pandemic, sign up for the Politico Nightly Newsletter at politico.com/newsletters. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.